Advice D&D movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by NobleKnightGames.com, where Out of Print is available again. And listeners like you, thanks for using the Tome's Amazon store.
We are Drakensteed, and you are listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome Show, a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. And today, I've brought in a legendary party of adventurers back out of retirement. We've sought the advice of the ancient Platinum Dragon and headed out to slay the evil, or at least the arrogant sense of superiority that seems to be infecting all of dragonkind, with Draconomicon Metallic Dragons. For our guest today, I've brought in a special team. You see, way back in the day, we did a discussion of the original Draconomicon with these exact same two experts. Without further ado, we have the meddlesome copper dragon in disguise who likes to pretend to be a blogger in charge of the At Will blog, but really is just there to play pranks on all the listeners, Quinn Murphy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, always happy to have you. And secondly, we have the majestic gold dragon watching over the gaming world from his perch on the internet at Critical Hits, where he keeps us all safe from the trolls of the world with his superior skill and combat prowess. That's right, it's the blogging dragon, so powerful he's considered a great worm. In an edition where such an age category doesn't exist anymore, it's Dave Chalker.
Rawr, I'm a monster.
I hope the hype of those introductions was worth it, guys.
It was good.
Okay.
If it sounded accurate, I don't know.
In any case, some quick news or announcements. First of all, I've been doing advice episodes on the show for a while now. I've gotten nothing but positive feedback as a result of it. And so I've kind of been thinking of making some slight changes to the show where I will still be giving you two episodes a month as promised, like I've done every month for 3 years now. But I was thinking that I would make a commitment to make one of those episodes every month be a review episode and one of those be an advice episode. I haven't decided to make the change yet, but I'm looking for your feedback. So please go ahead and send me any information you have about whether you like it one way or the other way. You can email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com. Do you guys have any preference or feedback on that?
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've got lots of great friends in the blogging community these days that are more than willing to come on and chat about and give some advice. So
I'm full of advice and other not so helpful things. So
yeah, I can't seem to stop jabbering with advice. So I definitely think you have a nice full pool.
Very good, very good. All right, so we'll see what the listeners have to say about that and see what emails I get in the next month or so and go from there. The other thing that I wanted to give people a heads up on coming up in the next month is in January I'm thinking that I'm going to do a third-party extravaganza episode. I have a lot of review materials from small publishers and third-party companies, and I'd kind of like to do a bunch of, you know, 5-10 minute segments about a whole bunch of different things and put them all out in one episode. And I thought if I could get more voices on that episode, it would be even more interesting than just hearing me talk over and over again. So if there's anybody out there who would like to talk about any book or product or dice or PDF or token or DM screen or just about anything from a third party or small publisher for D&D and just record a short little 5 minute segment about it, I would love to hear from you. Go ahead and email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com, and maybe you could have your glorious shining moment on the show. And maybe I could even talk these two gentlemen into joining me in that as well.
Yeah, that could be cool.
No pressure.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on to then try to sell us some more stuff.
I'm not selling you. I'm trying to get you on again.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for your money. I'm just trying to buy your time.
Uh-huh.
But today we are talking about the Draconomicon Metallic Dragons, the book that I keep wanting to call Draconomicon 2, although that's not really the title. It is by Richard Baker and Ari Marmel. It is the sequel to Draconomicon Chromatic Dragons. And it seems to me that this is intended to give more advice and more options on how to bring Metallic Dragons into your game. Does that seem to accurately describe what this book is going to try to do for us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to give us sort of a library of different things we can do with the Metallic Dragons. And really sort of like introduce them fully into the sort of fourth ed lore.
Right, because the first few years here of 4th edition D&D has been in many ways lacking in Metallic Dragon support, and I think this is their attempt to sort of re-inject these creatures into our D&D world.
It's also a different challenge than Chromatic Dragons, because Chromatic Dragons, they're evil, you want to stop them, no problem. Metallic Dragons have always possibly had this problem where, you know, well, do we always want to fight them? How do I get them involved? And so the book's got to tackle that issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Metallic Dragons have always been sort of problematic from, you know, a game design thing. Like, you know, you've got to, like, you know, they decide they're good, so now they've got to include them. And they have to spend all this time doing stats and all this other great stuff about them. But, like, your player should almost never be fighting them unless they're, like, evil or something, right? You know, so they always just sort of sat there, so... Right. I think they're trying to change that in this one, though.
Yeah, I think so, and we'll get into that more in a bit, but I wanted to take a quick break and let people know about our sponsor, NobleKnightGames.com. They are a friendly neighborhood game store that also has a very active online store, and not only can they get you the latest game books, but they specialize in finding books of old, no matter how far out of print they might be. For example, my picks for this episode, they have available for as little as $8, which is $9 off, the second edition Draconomicon book. They also have the third edition.
Oh, wow.
They have the third edition Draconomicon book for $30, which is $10 off their normal price. Plus, of course, you can get the Chromatic Dragons fourth edition book for $10 off and the Metallic Dragons fourth edition Draconomicon book for $8 off. So if you can reach all the way back through the lore, all the way back to second edition, getting your Draconomicon knowledge up to date. Have either of you read the older versions of this book?
Third edition Draconomicon is one of the most gorgeous D&D books out mm-hmm. there, and chock full of stuff for any edition. So it's a great book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read the second edition one way back in the day. Mm-hmm. I almost fell through a time warp when you mentioned that. I was like, wow, like the second ed one, but.
Well, and one of the great things about books like this is that they have a decent amount of mechanics and stats in there that, you know, may not translate so easily, but usually about half of these kinds of books are fluff and story and advice and things that are timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find all of that at NobleKnightGames.com. Make sure you check them out and let them know that the Tome Show sent you.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.nobleknight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
Okay, gentlemen, it's time to dig into this book. Draconomicon, Metallic Dragons, Chapter 1, Dragon Lore. Which is really, I guess in my opinion, very much the bestiary section of the book. This is reminds me a lot of the old Dragon Magazine articles where they would, you know, give you all this physiology and story and background behind monsters without necessarily bothering with too much of the mechanics for those monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some changes that are highlighted in this chapter for Metallic Dragons for 4th edition that wasn't true. And you sort of hinted at some of these before, like, for example, in previous editions, Metallic Dragons were always good aligned. In 4th edition, they're always listed as unaligned.
Mm-hmm.
And they also go into some detail in terms of the origins and the background stories and that kind of stuff for these dragons. And so I think that brings up some interesting things. All in all, are there any first of all, are there any changes I'm missing to the story?
No, I mean, they pretty much, you know, made Metallic and Dragon sort of playable as antagonists in the game. You know, they do a great job in sort of taking them from being the sort of goody-goody two-shoes sort of dragons, like, you know, we only do good things and we're creatures of pure light, and, you know, and sort of sanding them up a little bit, roughing them up, and then sort of making them sort of turning them into more sort of prideful, arrogant creatures, not evil, but not always looking out for everyone else, but looking for themselves first.
Sure. My question is does that necessarily make them so they're not good? I guess I'm nostalgic. I like my Metallic Dragons to be good, and making them blanketly unaligned kind of rubs me the wrong way, to be honest.
I was never a fan of blanket lawful good myself. It always seemed like I needed to work around that. At least unaligned is sort of like the cop-out alignment, you know. If you need them to be good in this adventure, they can be.
Right. Well, and I like that they've taken a very 4th edition sort of approach to things and said, look, just because this is the stat blocked alignment of this creature, that doesn't mean that every single one of them is that alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So given that, I guess I'm sort of the opinion that the alignment in the stat block should list sort of what the average specimen would be. I guess in my world, metallics will always be good. So anyway, I wanted to get that conversation out front so we can sort of move past it. But because I know that's the one thing that sort of rubs me the wrong way about things. But otherwise, there's a lot of good things in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I mean, you're not alone in that. It's just that I always felt like monster alignments, especially dragons and past editions, were pretty straitjacketed, you know, where, of course, I was always free to change it. You know, I was always free to change anything I wanted. But as a baseline, it just never quite worked for me that, like, here are all majestic, good gold dragons hanging around who only get in a fight with evil, and, you know, you had all these detect alignment spells and stuff too, so you always knew they were good, they could find evil by casting their own spells, and so it was really just kind of black and white, whereas this is more kind of grayish, which I like more.
Yeah, they were really just plot devices in previous editions. You know, they're sort of like, you know, oh my god, how are we going to get through this? Oh look, there's a gold dragon, he loves us, you know. And they make these guys a lot more active in the world, which I love. I love the fact that they're on a line now. I like them so much, but I pretty much ignored them in previous editions.
Well, I guess if changing the alignment to unaligned is helping people sort of get past that good position that they've always been in and use them more effectively in their campaigns, then I'm all for it. Because ultimately, I sort of feel like I look through the advice and I look through the way they explain playing your Metallic Dragons, and I'm thinking, okay, well, they're just describing good dragons but giving you ways to put them into your campaign, possibly as combat encounters, which is sort of what I've always done with them anyway. You know, the advice they're giving me on how to play them is play them the way you've always played them. And so I don't think that the way they've recreated dragons necessarily invalidates, you know, your old stories or the, you know, old novels or whatever from the line or from the brand. I think they all still fit. You just have to sort of take that alignment in the stat block with a bit of a grain of salt, and just understand that these are much more complex creatures than just what's listed in a stat block.
Yeah, I also feel like this chapter in particular, like where they go through all the different dragons in detail, is just really trying to hit you over the head with, like, here's other things you can do with it, you know, not just it's in a cave and you fight it, or On the flip side, you know, it always shows up to save you in the nick of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's all these other conflicts. And I think part of the other thing is providing gradations within Metallic Dragons, where we're used to, like, Chromatic Evil, Metallic Good, and Gem Neutral. And this is, well, dragons, even though they are all shiny dragons, they can range in sort of alignment and temperament.
But then they still keep that, like, that metallic chromatic dragon sort of conflict. They basically, I felt like they brought the blood war to dragons. You know, this just like crazy, like never ending. You know, they even say at a point where, you know, basically like a metallic dragon sees a chromatic dragon and he just blacks out.
Yeah.
Basically, and just like goes to tear it apart, you know, and then he's just like, I don't know what happened. You know, he transforms back into human form and he's just like, well, shall we finish dinner? You know, like, like nothing ever happened, right? You know, this sort of psycho, just, you know, we will fight these guys. We were born to fight chromatic dragons. So they keep that conflict there and they just sort of dress it up a little more.
Yeah, and I think that's important anyway, because otherwise you run the risk of having an imbalance in your environment, right? In that it doesn't make sense that chromatic dragons don't just trample over everything. But now there's this built-in part of their ecology that says metallic dragons are always going after them, and that's why that sort of keeps the chromatics and the evil dragons in check.
And your party can be right in the center of it.
Absolutely.
Front row seats.
Now, one of the things I did sort of start thinking about is, you know, I read through this, and anytime I'm reading through one of these books, I'm thinking about my own campaign, right? And I'm reading through it, and it's like, oh, my campaign currently doesn't really heavily involve dragons as part of the storyline. But the way they describe the metallic dragons, anytime there's a world-shaking event, they should be involved. You know, they're very aware of the things going on in the world, and metallics generally have the arrogant sense that they should be involved in everything that affects the world, because they're better than everybody else, and who better to manipulate the world than them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it made me wonder, you know, should I be injecting dragons as a major player in my storyline? And if I don't, does it make sense to not have the dragons involved?
Yeah, how can they not be sort of these powers behind the throne? And it makes it easier because they, you know, the metallics shape change, so it's very easy to just, you know, put them right in the action, where it's sort of like, you, like, it's always sort of a stretch to like try and stick the chromatic in, like, okay, you know, here's this, you know, 500 foot long sort of guy who, you know, is controlling everything behind the scenes. He basically has to be tucked away from civilized thing, where metallic dragons are like right in the action because they don't have to be in the dragon form all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you always, those questions give you more story ideas, I think, where
yeah, that's true. They really,
the dragons
do.
Aren't involved. Mm-hmm. Why not? You know, or
yeah.
Players can do to get them involved.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a great plot twist too.
Yeah, absolutely. And did anybody catch the little I almost found it as a lighthearted afterthought joke, sidebar, throwing back to some second edition, where on page 20 they go out of their way to have a sidebar discussing the Council of Worms.
Oh, yeah. One of my old favorite campaign settings that was really ridiculous.
I tell you what, though. I loved Council of Worms in second edition. And not because I like the idea of playing a dragon. In fact, I don't know that anybody I ever played with or saw or met ever actually played a real Council of Worms game. But I ripped things right out of Council of Worms and stuck it into my game all over the place. And one of my favorite characters was a half-dragon, you know, where we got the first mechanics for that right out of Council of Worms.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I ran and played Council of Worms games.
Did you?
Yeah, I ran a couple little one-shots where the PCs were like little hatchlings having dragon adventures, which was kind of fun. Although, there's always such a variety of dragons in that, you know, well, I'm a majestic gold dragon who breathes fire. Well, I spit a lozenge because I'm a gem dragon, you know. And then I played in another campaign, but it became more and more clear that he was just running us like any other party, we just happened to be dragons walking around, you know, like we were in dungeons and all this other stuff that didn't make sense. So I can see why it didn't get as much play with most people. It's a little more of a challenge.
Absolutely.
I missed that one. I must have been playing like Dark Sun or something. Like, I never played them.
It was one of the part of the setting glut that came out in second edition, and it had a whole box set and everything for it. But generally, I just pulled out the one book from the box set and carried that around with me because it had what I needed for my Half-Dragon PCs to put into all the other games.
Mm.
You were also probably kind of overpowered, but you know.
Probably, but there seemed to be a lot less focus on balance from one PC to another back in the second edition days.
It's very true.
Well, let's take one last look at chapter one then. What do we like in the chapter? What do we not like in the chapter? Who wants to go first?
Dave, you got something?
I like the big list of the dragons in detail, as I mentioned, where they go through each dragon, both the new ones in the book and the ones that were introduced in Monster Manual 2, and say, here's where they hang out, here's what they eat, here's what they do. Are you likely to encounter them in the city? You know, like, do they deal with other humanoids, or do they hang out in deserts by themselves? You know, that kind of thing. Just a lot of little, it's a lot of that ecology sort of stuff just presented very, very concisely.
Mm. Yeah.
I like the, I actually like the, in the Outlook and Psychology, the dragon behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It seems like a little tongue in cheek, but also sort of like does a good job of sort of hopping in the mind of the creatures and really sort of illustrates the shift that they're trying to make. With the metallic dragons from the inside out, like how do they think that makes them these unaligned sort of independent forces? And there's just great little things like, a dragon does is a dragon will. or anything worth doing is worth contemplating. Like that sort of informed and entertained.
Well, and that was my favorite section in this chapter as well. And I think because it gave me some ideas on how, as a DM, to role play when I've got a dragon as an NPC. You know, it's not just, you can't run a dragon the same way you run the local blacksmith. There has to be a special way and a special attitude about that, and this helps sort of formulate in my head several different characters that are dragons that can appear now in my games and have conversations with the players.
Mm-hmm.
And what areas do we think they could have maybe done better or maybe done more of or not had in the book or had in that chapter anyway?
It's kind of silly that they put another physiology section in, including the sidebar, like, go back to the first Draconomicon for more physiology. Like, do I need two books worth of physiology?
Yeah, I mean, it was really sort of weird to see it in there at all. And it's only like two pages, so you can quickly turn through the book and easily miss it too. Like, it just seemed kind of weird.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I was thinking. The other one that I was sort of thinking of is I don't know that I necessarily need that much information on gods. You know, a general this is the outlook that dragons have towards gods, and maybe an example of how dragons have interacted with the gods and become exarchs and that kind of stuff. But given that every setting has such vastly different gods, I just don't know that I needed that much time spent on that either.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one big dragon god already.
Right. Well, there's two big dragon gods already.
Well, one for these guys.
Right. Although, according to that chapter, there are metallic followers of Tiamat as well.
Yeah, but who cares, honestly?
Well, that's part of the fun, though. I mean, that's part of where I start getting ideas of, oh, what if I had the metallic dragon show up? That has been playing the guise of I'm the good guy working behind the scenes, but secretly all along has been a cult follower of Tiamat.
Yeah, but I were a metallic dragon who worshipped Tiamat, I'd kind of be offended that she didn't have a head for me.
That's true. That might be a deal breaker there. All right, chapter two. Chapter 2 is called A DM's Guide to Dragons, and this is really the advice chapter. The first one is really all about flavor and fluff, and it's an inspiration for anybody who might pick up this book and read it. But the second chapter is all about DMs and giving them advice. How do you put dragons into your game? What do we think? What do we like? What's good in this chapter?
I like it, but it just should be mentioned. The subdual encounters are really cool. Can be adapted. Already sort of in the Mighty Balago sphere, there's been sort of work sort of, you know, taking that and then sort of fitting it to other encounters. It can sort of fit in there. They're great little rules for that.
Section that I missed when I first read it.
You missed that section the first time?
Yeah, well, I ended up getting a pretty early copy, and one of the things that people really wanted to know about was the subdual encounters, and I just couldn't find it. It's kind of tucked away right before the skill challenges, which I was kind of fixated on the skill challenges because I like them so much.
Sure. Yeah, they've done a nice job in recent books of giving more examples of skill challenges in relevant ways that sort of helps people understand how they work, which I think has been nice. I've generally, in fact, ever since DMG 2 came out, I've been spending a lot more time hanging out in the advice chapters of books. I found myself heavily inspired by the advice in the DMG 2, and so ever since then, I just pore over that those sections and spend a lot of time looking for inspiration in my games. So what, if anything, could they have improved in this chapter? Nothing. It was a perfect chapter.
It wasn't perfect, but I mean, it was. This one has just got like GM overload. Like, you know, you've got some dual encounters, running into the skill challenges, running into the traps, running into the campaign ideas, running into adventure ideas. Right? It's just this grab bag. I mean, I've had the book. I've like gone through a bunch of time. I haven't even fully absorbed the chapter. There's just a lot. Like, if you're in the part of adventure design, there's just so much stuff here for you.
If anything, I think that would be my biggest concern, is that there's just so much there. Am I going to be able to find what I need when I need it? You know, which while a concern, is pretty high praise, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even if you ran a completely dragon-centric campaign that needed a lot of plot ideas, you still wouldn't use everything here, but it's you're always going to be taking stuff piecemeal out of it.
Okay, should we move along to chapter 3 then?
Layers.
Chapter 3 is the layers chapter, and it's for the most part, it's just page after page after page of layers. Here's a room, here's what's there, here's what you encounter, here's another layer, here's, you know, another series of encounters, here's another layer, another series of encounters. It's really just sort of the dungeon delve of dragon layers.
It's actually kind of what was disappointing to me about it, that it was just some delves that had dragons as bosses or whatever. I think there's only one, when I looked at it, where the dragon was something other than just a flat-out combatant. All the others were, you know, here's a dragon and here's the things that hang out with the dragon and kill things with him, and he rolls initiative against you, you know?
Yeah.
I really wanted other encounter types and other things that could be going on.
Well, especially since the metallic dragons are the ones that actually interact with people, right? Like, if you fight the chromatic dragons, well, you know, if you walk into its lair, right, it's just going to smoke you, right? That's all. They really, you know, I mean, they're more complex than that. But at the heart of it, that's what they do. But the metallic ones, you know, they could turn into, like, a person, and they could, like, you know, talk with you. They could, you know, they could, they're more interested in parlaying and sort of being devious in it, you know, but in the layers they're just, you know,
kill.
They're just doing what chromatics would do to you.
Well, and I wonder if a little bit of that wasn't them overcompensating for previous editions. You know, they're working so hard to get you past this concept that you can't fight metallic dragons that they give you nothing but fighting metallic dragons. And I kind of feel like that whole chapter is a bit of overkill. You know, I didn't need that many pages of the book taken up by encounters, because ultimately this isn't exactly like, you know, I now have sample encounters or sample little delves that I could pull out in a dozen different books. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be pouring through a dozen books when I want to find one encounter at a specific level, you know, to fit into a certain way, right?
Right.
So the usefulness is limited, at least until they can put them all up on D&D Insider and make them searchable, or, you know, something like that would be fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But but it's not there, and until it is, I think it's a bit of overkill. And, you know, I would have loved, you know, a little delve describing this kind of encounter with a dragon, and then another delve describing another type of encounter with a dragon, and then another delve describing, you know, and give me some variety and give me some ideas of, oh, these are ways that I can use dragons in my adventures, mm-hmm. instead of just giving me 15 ways to use a dragon, you know, that's exactly the same as the last one.
Yeah, and they can do it. The ultimate dungeon delve, which was one of their big con events over the summer. Mm-hmm. The final encounter of that was a possessed silver dragon that had all kinds of crazy shadow poison in it. And you could just fight it and kill it, but you could also engage in a skill challenge to cure it. And in fact, my girlfriend E made the final success leaping into the dragon's mouth and shoving the cure down its throat. You know, that kind of thing is awesome,
yeah.
And could have easily been adapted to a book like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I don't even know if it's like so much that they have a bunch of these encounters is that they don't have, you know, I think what we're leading to is that they don't have the right encounters. Like, wouldn't it have been great if they took this, all these scenes and did like three adventures that were all sort of more complex and, you know, sort of took the players into sort of a particular, you know, state or, you know, whatever, you know, because they've got great, they have great characters in the, you know, where I'm jumping ahead just a touch, but they have great characters in the back of the book.
They do. And yeah, I think basically what we're saying is that we would have liked to have seen more variety out of this section.
Yeah. Yeah. More complex.
Absolutely. All right. Well, since you went there anyway, let's go ahead and jump to chapter 4. This is our new monsters section. Now, I kept getting confused because, you know, I'm reading about gold dragons and silver dragons and things, and I'm looking back to see if there's new statistics for them, and there's not, because we got all that in Monster Manual 2. Luckily, I do most of my planning online, right? So it doesn't really matter which book it's from. But we do have new statistics for dragons here and other creatures, including bringing us some classic metallic dragons that we didn't have stats for before, and bringing us some new types of metallic dragons. Anything that stands out as particularly interesting to you guys?
They brought forward a lot of the ones that they had sort of left out for the time being, like copper and bronze, and not copper, but bronze and that kind of thing. But I really like the ones that are completely new, or at least completely new names, like Orium Dragon.
Yes.
Which... they basically made up a magical thingy, you know, to have it be based on. But it's got this, like, awesome breath weapon that spawns little dragon wisp things.
And I've sort of been working under assumption, but I never actually played the setting, so correct me if I'm wrong. Is that not based on the old second edition setting of Red Steel?
It is not Red Steel, okay. And in fact, they specifically rejected it, or else it would have been the Cinnabril dragon.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I never played the setting, and as they described it, it sort of reminded me of what I understood about Red Steel.
It's very reminiscent. I agree, but I think the hatred of Red Steel is so strong in the current crop of developers, at the very least, that that's probably not going to happen.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but I mean, there are times that they almost go so far as to describe Orium dragons as being red, gold, steel-like creatures, you know?
Yeah.
So that's probably where I got that concept from.
No, it's definitely there, but the developers have come out and said, no, we hate red steel. In fact, not quite like that blunt, but yeah, that they wanted to steer away from that and kind of make their own sort of weird magic metal that they could base on and create this kind of weird dragon.
Sure. I particularly really like the concept of the Mithril dragon as sort of this oracle sort of creature, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of You know, I've got this campaign building in my head as I look at the Mithril Dragon, where the players consistently, when times are tough and they just don't know what to do, they go to this oracle, which is a dragon locked up in some ruins or temple or whatever, and they go over and over and over again. And then as they get more powerful, they eventually realize that, oh, this dragon is actually has gone insane years ago and, you know, is part of the problem or is now going to turn on us or, you know. And then, you know, turn this oracle they've been using all along into this big climactic battle.
That'd be very cool.
And I read the Mithril Dragon, and it feel, even the picture that I see there for the Mithril Dragon feels very much that way to me. Like I get ideas for story and for adventure as I read, which always speaks highly of what the work that they've done.
Mm-hmm. They are. Overall, in this chapter is great. Sorry.
The art. I love the cobalt dragons.
Mm-hmm.
I just love. I like it. You know, it's another one where I absolutely adore the art. But just this sort of the concept of them. These sort of, you know, I don't know. They feel sort of like, I don't know, these sort of harsh Viking dragons. You know, they respect only strength and are just sort of. Very much in tune with sort of how they roughed up the personalities mm-hmm. of metallic dragons and stuff. I like them a lot.
Yeah, very cool. And I tell you, since we talked about artwork, my 3-year-old also really loves the artwork. He always looks through my new books with me the first time I look through them, you know, when I thumb through it. And he always points out artwork that he sees and tells me what it is. In this book, it was just dragon, 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 every page. he had to point out every single dragon for 200 pages for me.
Well, now you know.
Now I know they're there, in case I wasn't sure.
You'll never forget.
And you've got some cute artwork as we get into the wormlings.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so cuddly. They really need to make plush metallic wormling dolls.
And they could I mean, I don't know who did, I don't know the signature on this, so I'm not sure who did the artwork on these, but generally speaking, they did a good job of definitely looking like the dragons that I know, but at the same time, looking like little cute toy versions of those dragons.
Mm-hmm. I also really like the hollow dragons.
Yes.
Oh, the hollow dragons are awesome.
That's very cool. I like that concept a lot.
Yeah.
Like, we don't do Dracoliches. We're way more awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're Mecha Dragon, basically.
Yeah.
Dave, explain the concept to the listeners. What is a Hollow Dragon?
It is a metallic dragon that decides to become some kind of dragon construct that its spirit inhabits the sort of outer shell, hence hollow, of its metallic scales so that it can go on living for whatever purpose.
Yeah. So it's, you know, chromatic dragons might turn themselves into Dracoliches, and gold dragons just sort of turn into this construct metal elemental filled energy shell that just lives forever and guards whatever it is they're meant to guard. It's a very cool concept. Then we get into our other creatures section, and this is where you have some things that I think are very cool. And I'm glad to have statistics for them. I'm just not sure how much they fit in with metallic dragons. I mean, I can kind of see the threads, but they're fairly tenuous threads.
Yeah, it was cool to see Draconians again. That was my big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I can see, you know, I can see story-wise why Draconians would be in there, right? Because they're made from metallic dragon eggs by evil dragons. At least that's the story from Dragonlance, right?
Yep. It's still the one, and they also extended it to the new kinds of metallic dragons, probably to the outrage of many purists.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I found it to be good and interesting, and I'm glad it's there. These are not creatures that I'm going to be encountering with metallic dragons, right?
Yeah, well, they had a section in one of the previous chapters about how you can design encounters because they're all solos. Like how you can either adjust them to be elites or play with your XP budget to get some other critters in there on top of solos. I like that they're providing ways to have these creatures show up. I was just disappointed that there weren't more of them and they weren't as interesting as the ones in the Chromatic Dragon book.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and you brought up a good point. One of the later sections of this chapter is how to make dragons elites instead of solos. And it's a concept I've come to really like because I get the awesome of a dragon, but I get the tactics as a DM of building encounters where I get to bring in different creatures with different roles. It's not just a dragon and maybe some minions. I can bring in a dragon and make him an elite and then bring in all of his minions and have it all be one big battle.
Or like a pair of dragons, like mm-hmm. a mated pair or
absolutely.
Something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing I wanted to know on the Draconians there, since they're bringing them back, I pictured instantly when I saw it, was just like, so what do the Dragonborn think of these guys? Right? Like, you know, like, do the Dragonborn just think these guys are, you know, these, like, sort of corrupted abominations because they're sort of, you know, made artificially or, you know, or what? You know, like, I hope that's something in the future that they elaborate on because I think that would be great.
Somebody should totally pitch that article to Dragon Magazine.
Writing it now.
Okay.
On the list.
You better get it out. Get it submitted before I put this episode out.
Race you.
Yeah. Dragonborn get no love in this book at all.
They don't.
Yeah, it's sort of conspicuous, you know, that they're sort of not mentioned at all. Like, how do they relate to Metallic Dragon? So maybe they're saving it for DDI or something.
Maybe.
I want to know.
Or the Dragonborn book, but
yeah, they're probably saving it for the Dragonborn book.
But they have no Dragonborn other creatures in here. Anything? Kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean they have dragon in their name, right? You'd think they would show up in the dragon book. We also go on and we have the ever popular Hall of Fame section. Although of the Hall of Fame sections, this one excited me the least. I mean, it's awesome to have these epic and cool creatures from the stories that I've read or whatever statted out and ready to play. But the only one that I was really interested in delving into and looking into in some detail was Bahamut because, I mean, how cool is it to have stats for a god? But
Is it really cool? And they offer a lot of options about
they do
how, like in his old man form how he can help out the party and all that kind of stuff. His part was really cool, but I agree with him the rest of them and. I kind of wonder, maybe I'm failing my D&D lore check, but did they just make most of these up for this book?
Some of them, I'm not sure that they did, but I think a lot of them are obscure enough that, I mean, I consider myself a pretty diehard Forgotten Realms fan, and it took me some careful reading and looking through things to catch, oh, that's a dragon from the Forgotten Realms that used to hang out in Silvery Moon and be one of the guardians. Okay, usually when I read that story, I was more focused on the girl with the silver hair blowing, you know, blue fire around.
Oh, right.
So, you know, you don't really pay attention to the dragons much. So, yeah, I mean, I think some of them and one of the other ones, they actually give a reference to a Dragonlance story.
Yeah, Silvara is pretty important to the book, so it was good to see her there. But most of them were, you know, and the ones that are new dragons, I mean, I guess they sort of retrofitted, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think some of them were dragons. If you knew enough obscure knowledge, you could pick it out. But the chances that anybody would necessarily know all of them, I mean – If people like us didn't know all of them, I suspect that most people aren't going to recognize, you know, the majority of what they see here.
Yeah.
Okay, so any other I guess we also have the alternate powers, alternative power section. We already talked about the elite section. And the alternative powers one is fairly similar. I like the concept. I usually find, unless I'm going to be running a dragon-based campaign, I don't do a lot with the alternative powers. I really liked the idea the first time I saw it, and then I realized that I'm not going to use it most of the time. Just because I might only have 3 dragons, 4 dragons in a campaign. I don't really need the surprise of the alternative powers to throw things off, you know?
And on top of that, you have all these dragons to choose from in the first place. Like, am I really going to send my party up against a purple dragon 3 times
right.
so I can choose different powers each time?
Well, and I could see it being cool if you're running a dragon-based campaign. You know, where there are a lot of dragons being used in various ways. But I mean, a lot of this with tools like the Monster Builder, you know, I feel like I can pretty easily customize my monsters anyway. Now, what would be cool is if I could go into the Monster Builder and open up the Silver Dragon, and it gives me the option of picking a Silver Dragon with these powers or a Silver Dragon with that power. You can swap them out using the alternative powers that are already given to us.
That would be pretty awesome.
That would be great.
One of us needs to go work for Wizards and be turn into a really good programmer.
Yeah, I think a lot of things would have to happen for that to be.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, my incentive for working for Wizards these days is pretty low. It doesn't seem like a very stable position.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah,
it is. Okay, so without going too far into a tangent, any last thoughts in this chapter before we summarize our thoughts of the book as a whole?
So doesn't Drakensteed sound like an awesome name for a band?
It sounds like a metal band.
Yeah,
it's a
band. But I think it has to be a German band.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least we could form a band called Drakensteed and use fake German accents.
Ooh, I like that. Can we record everything over Skype? Because I think it would be incredible if we could form a band that never actually met.
Right. Or course, I could just play Rock Band.
I say, do any of us actually play instruments?
No.
Okay. Nope.
unless you consider a computer keyboard an instrument.
Yeah, see. I was a drummer like 12 years ago. So I don't know that I would be qualified as good at anything at this point.
But
I did play clarinet in grade school.
Well, there you go.
Get a little, you know, classical woodwind.
So I could play really bad drums, and Quinn could play really bad clarinet, and then Dave's our singer, and we are a German metal band now.
We are Drakensteed because I don't.
We are Drakensteed.
I mean, like with a German metal band. Especially a fake German metal band. I don't need any singing talent. I just need to shout.
That's right.
Right. And then we just have to find, get a hold of Metalocalypse's agents and then have like a face-off.
Well, and I think all of our songs have to be titled after powers, D&D powers.
Tide of Iron.
that's the exact one I was going to say. Very cool. All right. So let's go ahead and summarize this before we end up scaring everybody away with our musical talent.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah. All right. So all in all, we seem to like the book. There were, you know, a few things that we thought maybe could have been where we could have gotten some more variety. I think our biggest problem was a lack of variety in the dragon layers. But beyond that, we really liked a lot of what we saw in this book. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, I think for me in fourth ed, I actually like Metallics as a GM more than I like Chromatics. I mean, don't get me wrong, Chromatics are like iconic. There's nothing quite like, you know, getting smacked down by then smacking down like a red dragon,
mm-hmm.
right? It's one of life's great pleasures, but I think the Metallics are a lot more interesting. Like as a GM, I get like a ton more ideas what I'm going to do with these guys than I get with a Chromatic. So I think mission accomplished as far as that goes, getting them into play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would tend to agree. I find a lot of advice and inspiration in this book. I didn't say much at the time. I found chapter one sometimes to be a little bit tedious. Okay, more mm-hmm. dragon, more dragon, you know, more physiology, more society, whatever. But at the same time, what was there was good. And so I can totally see myself going back and looking at it and say, okay, I want to put a Mithril Dragon into my game. Let me read about those. And I think that section is going to be just spot on awesome for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the advice section in chapter two was right on. I think the new statistics we have for dragons was really good. All in all, what kind of person do you think should be buying this book?
Just like the other Draconomicon, if your campaign heavily features dragons, you know, you're probably not doing it one-sided, you know, just the Chromatics or just the Metallics, so the books kind of balance it out. But I think, as we were talking about, a lot of the new dragon types give enough inspiration towards, you know, campaigns and adventures and whatnot really warrants picking up for most DMs.
Yeah, where the first one was sort of like, hey, you thinking about using dragons, pick this up. This one is sort of like, just pick it up. You know, like this one will give you the first one was good if you were going to use dragons. This one is good and you'll maybe make you use a dragon where you wouldn't have.
Right.
Because the metallics are just much easier to fit in.
Well, and if you want to include dragons in interesting and unique ways, this dragon or this Draconomicon is there to help you do that. I mean, and honestly, you can look at this book and get inspiration on fitting chromatic dragons into your game in new and interesting ways too. Chromatic dragons are every bit as intelligent as metallic dragons. They're just evil about it too, at the same time, you know.
Yeah, I really get the feeling that this book is better than the first Draconomicon for story bits and creating interesting situations, whereas the first Draconomicon was better as a monster book,
sure,
which I guess makes a certain amount of sense.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, good. Any last thoughts before I close things out?
Nope, I think I've said everything I need.
All right.
When does Dragonsteed record?
I think we're going to start working on the first album right after we're done recording here.
All right.
All right.
Nice.
All right, so this has been episode 122. I want to start off by thanking our guest, Quinn Murphy, from the At Will blog. We can find you at 4eatwill.com. Is that correct?
.net.
.net.
Mm-hmm.
You people in your nets.
Yeah.
And that's 4eatwill or 4eatwill. And we also have Dave Chalker from criticalhits.com. Are you a .com?
I am a .com. Okay. It's critical-hits.
It is critical-hits. That's what I read, even if you didn't hear the dash.
Right. It's a silent dash.
It's a silent dash. That's right. And I also wanted to, of course, thank our sponsor, NobleKnightGames.com. Please consider checking them out and letting them know that we sent you. We appreciate their support. They are a fantastic group of people over there. You guys have any experience with Noble Knight?
No, I've seen them before. I haven't had haven't needed to get anything from them yet, but you keep you know when you're bringing up the second ed Draconomicon and all this other stuff, I was like, oh, I might actually have to check them out because there's some old stuff that I want to pick up.
Yeah.
So
they also advertise on my site, so go Noble Knight as well.
Yay! No, and I, you know, I'm one of those people that I have never gotten rid of a gaming book in my life, at least not willingly. So I still have all of my old first and second ed books, and there are some things that I don't have or that I used to have and were destroyed over time, and I would love to get another copy of, like, the old second edition Forgotten Realms Atlas, where it was just a book of maps of different locations and, you know, and things from novels, and, you know, it was just fun to pore over and look at the details, and it was just a great thing, and I would love to be able to find some of the old products like that. But that's just the geek in me. Of course, we're recording and you're out there listening to a D&D podcast, so I guess you can all relate. Well, and ultimately, I suppose you can also, you know, that's where you can find those gentlemen and our sponsor, NobleKnightGames.com. You can also email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com, review the show on iTunes to help people find out about the show, and swing by the Amazon store where the show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps us pay the bills. And you can find links to the At Will blog, Critical Hits, Noble Knight Games, and all the other things that we've talked about in the show notes at the website at thetomeshow.com. Well, the time has come. We've come out of retirement, fulfilled our epic destinies to become Drakensteed, and defeated the metallic dragons, good, evil, and overwhelmingly unaligned, with the gleaming arrow of dragon slaying that is episode 122, Draconomicon, Metallic Dragons of
Thank you. but you're a legend. It's you, not a power. Well, my human power makes all of them look cower.
It's a tiny
I'm on the wall.